Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And we're getting good at this. You can...
too good, I don't like it.
Find us on www.weeklygeekspeak.com. Our Twitter is...
at Weekly Geek Speak.
And our Facebook is...
Weekly Geek Speak.
There we
go. You're not getting this yet.
Come on, people.
Today we will...
<We're a> brand.
Today we will be trailer trashing. Steve will be putting his first nomination forward for his Hall of Fame entrant. Paulkins is already in there.
Paulkins is well in there.
Last month, so Steve has the gauntlet of October.
I'm very scared Steve's going to go, well, Red 6 is in there. Red 1. And red. And we're just going to have the Rogue Squadron in there.
All of them.
I'd be like, oh, they all beat the Empire.
And we'll also
did
be.
Did you read my notes?
Damn it. Bastard. We'll also be having an interview with Rob Nevitt, who is the curator of the Celluloid Screams Horror Festival here in Sheffield, telling us about what's coming up in the festival. First of all, I've been watching a lot of these 80s films where. People have like gangs, they all have like gang names, like in The Warriors you have like Swan and people and I was thinking about us having, is there any like name if you were in an 80s gang? And to kick it off I thought, well, let's go on our Twitter handles. Your Scott is Scotty Magic, so you would be Magic if you were in our gang.
So, oh, my name in the gang is
so
Magic.
You're like Magic.
So you're Psych.
I'm Psych or Stuntman. And then we got Jazz
Pirate.
Jazz.
Oh, Jazz Magic and Psych.
Jazz Magic and Psych.
Oh, we sound really badass.
I like
we
that. Do, yeah.
I like that a lot.
I'm in it.
So I'm there with that.
Is there any you'd prefer, or are you sold on Magic?
Magic works.
I like Jazz,
In the context of listing our names together, because we're a gang. That works for me.
The Geek Speaks.
The Geek Speaks.
And we incorporate all our followers as well.
Yeah.
And they've all got little gang names. Oh, we could get like gang hoodies.
Psych.
Can we have a gang?
Can we have a gang? Can we
do you want to be my gang? My gang.
No, not that gang. It's the wrong gang.
We'll end up in prison. We gang banged. But Steve, yours is Jazz, which is the name of the shittest Transformer.
And the shittiest genre review. No, take that back. Jazz fans can get really passionate.
They can.
It's perfectly valid.
I like a good jazz flute.
You don't need form.
I do
form.
Like a good jazz flute.
You don't need form to inform music.
I like it.
I want to ask the podcast question, what was the last film that you watched? And I'm going to go to Stephen.
It was The Raid.
The Raid?
Yes.
Raid.
This is the film about raiding a big building.
It is. It's very much in the sort of, SWAT team turns up at a giant apartment block. They're going to go in to catch this drug kingpin that runs the tower block, lets all the scum of the earth live there, and so they put it. And it's very much in the vein of Dread. They go in and they take the building level by level.
It's almost like a video game to structure an action
definitely.
Film, isn't it? Like increasing
and there
levels.
Is. There's points in the film where there's almost like the boss fight kind of thing.
Yeah,
there's one guy and they take him down and then... Oh,
I always
and
remember
now
that fight
coming.
With the long-haired bloke at the end with who the two of them are fighting and he's just kicking their asses.
It's so well choreographed.
Mm.
Subtitled at the beginning and then you don't need them. It's just all-out action, choreography.
It's just a simple idea to structure well, to let all the bits that should power the film just forefronted.
Yeah.
So each level just more intense fight. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Because you don't really want much else going on, really, do you? In the martial arts.
I think my only criticism that dropped it from an 8 to a 7 is that it was an hour and 40 minutes. Which is fine. I think if it had been 20 minutes shorter,
it just dragged a bit.
It started at the beginning, and then it went bang, 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 stuff. And I paused it to go and get my chocolate out of the fridge.
You do know that 20 minutes you kept on pause is not part of the film.
Oh, is it not?
Just got really weird.
There's a great boring bit where they just had like point of view going to the fridge and some chocolate. I don't know what was going on. I had a wee. I didn't need to see that.
This bloke fed a cat.
Steve struggles to differentiate his life from film.
I thought it was a bit odd.
So yeah, just a bit a little bloated.
And that was 40 minutes in, and I thought, God, it's really fast paced and action packed. And then it just seemed to drift a bit, and then there was more action, and it drifted a bit. So from really strong opening.
But do you think
if it shaved a few bits off the dialogue driven scenes?
I've not actually seen it to comment, but do you think it's the calms between stores, the pause
for
breath?
It is, but I just felt they went on a little bit.
You didn't need to pause for breath. It was a bit
It was nice. Just a balls out, modern day kung fu y kind of.
Yeah, and the idea that you've built up to this boss level and these levels and these things, you don't need that breather. You want to get more intense and more bang, 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 bang.
You don't need that bit of a Mario game when Toad offers you three chests. You just want to get on with the next level.
Exactly. You want to unlock the next Mario suit and jump on someone's head and headbutt bricks. But yeah, great film. Go out and watch it.
What was your grade?
I give it a 7.
Scott, what was the last film you watched?
The only one I've not mentioned, so I'm going to make out it was the last film I saw, Jungle Book.
Jungle Book. Ooh, you've been doing all the Disney.
I am. I'm working my way in a really weird order. Like, no rhyme or reason.
No.
I think it's basically what Sky Disney allow me to watch in whatever order.
Did you enjoy it? Good as you remember?
It's as good as I remember. About 6 out of 10.
Okay.
But it powers through from 2 songs.
I always don't know where that one goes. It seems to your memories are just of the 2 big songs, aren't they?
But all your memories of it, it's kind of everything that happens. It's a very plodding, like, and now they go over here, and now this happens, and then and it's like a bunch of skits in a jungle.
Skits in a jungle.
It's skits in a jungle. You know, I enjoyed a bit of Bare Necessities. We all sing along to I Want to Be Like You, and then you're just like, what am I watching?
What's going on? Why are they?
What does Bagheera want? What's Baloo's inner turmoil here? It's fine.
Yeah. Any bit weird?
It's all a bit weird.
Okay.
It's a boy in his pants talking to a panther and a bear. I don't want to get too picky about what's weird or not.
I would begin to question whether bears and panthers live in the same environment.
Same universe.
I think a bear wouldn't be that gentle with all the other
animals. He ripped his face off, though, it would be...
Because they kind of all live in this harmonious interspecies utopia where...
Did you never watch Gentle Ben?
No.
Oh, a TV show about a boy and a bear.
I watched Grizzly Man. Which really is the worst children's film. My mum sat me down in front. But they live in this, like, multi-species utopian jungle where the panther can go and talk to the wolves, the best friends, and then he can go and talk to the elephants.
Yeah.
But weirdly, there's this one tiger everyone's scared of.
Hmm.
What is that? It's just a tiger. Well, if you're an elephant, you can't take a tiger. I'm pretty sure the panther could take
the panther,
a tiger.
Yeah.
The bear should definitely have took the tiger.
Yeah.
And he lost. What's with this fucking tiger?
The badass
tiger.
Well, the whole film that I watched was a bit weird because it was the Human Centipede 2.
Oh,
millipede, as it's called,
Ass to Mouth.
What did you think?
I thought it was actually all right. I mean,
oh really?
Yeah, because you said, the first 10 minutes, I had to turn it off because I was scared because it was too horrible. It does.
Oh no, I watched it all. But
did you watch it all?
Just the first 10 minutes made me think, "Where's this going?" And it never let up.
I thought it was interesting. It's definitely kept the. I think it has kept the humour from the first one. Everything's kind of a real sick humour through the whole thing. I like the fact that the first hour of the film is kind of a character study of this bloke. And in a way, if it didn't go into the completely disgusting ending that it does go to, this would be a kind of really interesting film, because this guy who does this, makes these longer human centipede, he's kind of... You could almost feel sorry for him. You don't by the end of it, but you could, because he's abused by his dad when he's a kid. His mother hates him and blames
him. That explains everything.
But ugly, everyone takes the piss out of him because he's like a really short bloke. Played by Lawrence L. Harvey, who does a cracking job in my view. But it's just when it gets to the end and he starts to build the centipede. Now in the first one, I always say that it's all in your imagination.
It
That's
is, yeah.
why it's horrible, Definitely. Because yeah, it's yeah. in your head. In this one, you see it But because he isn't a surgeon. Like the first one, he was a mad bloke, but he was a surgeon. Yeah. He's just stapling people's mouths to their asses, and when they shit, he gives them laxatives to make them poo. And it's basically he's one night of ultimate debauchery as he staples these people together and makes them crawl around and they shit in each other's mouths.
This time?
He shoves tubes. It was meant to be 12, but he only got 10 because 2 died.
Yeah.
It's wrong. I would recommend it to nobody. But at the same time, it sets its stall out and it delivers. It was a 6 out of 10 for me.
Really?
It was.
Wow, okay.
I was entertained and I laughed through a lot of it because it's so bad taste that it becomes a joke. And I didn't take any of it seriously. Now, there was bits towards the end where I was going, this is a bit much. You know, it really, but it sets its stall out. Everyone knows the human.
I find it really funny though that you're so quite into it, and then you're just like, I'd recommend it to nobody.
I would recommend it to no one.
I love that.
You couldn't go, well, go watch Human Centipede 2. It's great. It isn't. It's horrible. But as a horror fan, it did what a horror movie should, and it disgusted me. It made me go, ooh, you know. It did all this stuff. He caves his mother's head in and things, and it was really good in that aspect. But it's not for everyone. It is not for many people. It's too much.
Mm.
And the cutscene, the bits that were cut from it, and I saw the cut version. I went and watched the cut bits later on, because you have to. It's the rule.
Yeah.
It just goes even more fucking bad. You know, it's just so morally wrong and bankrupt, but it's Human Centipede. It's supposed to be.
Are you going to watch the third one?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's 50 Centipede.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know. I get why you didn't like it. I don't get why most people...
I think I was in the wrong frame of mind and I didn't see that. I just saw
you can't,
this is
I
too far.
I don't know
far.
If it's a frame of mind thing. I think it's what sort of stuff. Andrew as a horror fan is quite amused by a lot of the bad taste stuff.
I am, but I think to me it just went... I just went that bit too far. I couldn't... No.
Having sex with the back of the centipede was the step too far for me. But there's really funny bits in, like, there's a bit
it's
where
funny
he kidnaps.
Where people draw the line there, like, like it's all fine, and then you go, ooh.
But actually,
because none of it's fine.
No.
The bit that kept making me giggle though was there's the bit where he basically kidnaps these people from where he works. He was a security guard in a car park, and at night he gets people, he like knocks them out and takes them back to his warehouse. There's a bit where he takes a pregnant woman and her husband, but there's a little baby
again. There's
a little baby in the car and it's crying, and he picks it up and goes choo 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 and leaves it in the car. Then every time he comes back to this car park, he's just left the kid in the car, and the kid's just sat there crying, and he's like coo 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 and walks off. It's kind of funny because it's the fact that that's fine for him. You really understand that this character is mentally, like, he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Also, this character is, he doesn't have a line in the whole film. He's almost like a black and white comedy skew, if you know what I mean. He never says anything, he just makes noise. That's why I think Laurence Harvey does
like
a great
job.
That
guy from Police Academy.
But no, I thought it was fine. I'm not gonna tell you to go out and watch it, but at the same time, if you do want to watch it, it's not that bad, and it's well filmed as well. It isn't one of these shitty horror films, which is badly filmed.
Done well.
The acting is good, the way it's filmed is good, the content is moral and bankrupt and horrible. Do what you want with it.
Okay.
I don't care. But it's not bad. Apart from it really is.
Yeah.
It's weird. Time for trailer trash.
Trailer trash.
And we're trashing 3 trailers again today.
Yeah, we're talking
trailers. It always sounds like we're just slagging off trailers. Like we're going to slag off trailers.
Well, if they deserve slagging off, they will. If not,
but it sounds like we're definitely going to do that. Though.
Basically, it's trailer trash. If it's good, it's like a rate nice. I don't know where I'm going.
It's a trailer park.
It's one of those rate nice trailers that. Like, I don't know, Kid Rock has.
It's got aircon and all the mod cons.
I don't know who likes trailers. And even if it's a really nice trailer, I imagine if I was rich, or let's for example say Robert De Niro, wouldn't just have a trailer. There's something that's provided by, but not for their own, like, personal, this is where I live. So I went with Kid Rock for those reasons.
Yeah.
Then if they're shit, we trash them, like trailer trash, the stereotypical trailer trash.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trailer right. Trash, trailer thrash. I don't even know whether.
I like it.
Right.
Trailer cash.
So the first one we'll go on about is Don John.
Yeah.
Don Johnson. The long awaited
autobiography of Don Johnson.
Miami Vice.
Don Johnson. My body, my pad, my ride, my family, my church, my boys, my girls, my porn. Body, pad, ride, family, church, boys, girl. Don John is the film directed, written, and starring
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt. What did you think, Scott?
I don't know. I'm trying to base it on that one trailer. It looked odd.
It looks like, well, basically the story is about a man who likes wanking and he gets with a girl and she's like, stop wanking!
But
and
it's kind like, of like, I don't know what angle it's trying to play with it, because it didn't sell the fact he's obsessed with it.
No.
But at the same time, they all treat it like we everyone watches porn, don't they? Yeah.
He's basically a bit of a prick. That's all I got from the trailer.
I think it just came across as quite self-indulgent and then a bit arrogant and a bit weird.
I thought, where's it going? And then it didn't quite go anywhere.
No.
And then towards the end I went, oh, it's supposed to be funny. And then they were a slight amusing thing and singing a car. And then I went, well, they haven't sold that really in any other bit of the trailer till now.
Doesn't know what it is. You know?
No, because there's the build-up. He likes his cars, his family, his things, his stuff, and it gets faster and faster. And then you think, okay.
I had a kind of train spotting feel at that start.
Yeah.
And then he just turned out to be one of those guys you don't really like.
Yeah,
it's
you know what I mean.
Exactly.
It looks like it's going to be quite stylish in the film. It might be quite interesting to watch. I don't know what it is.
No,
basically, I don't know what it's.
It doesn't give much away.
Intents and purposes is right now.
Because when I heard the premise, I was like, oh well, that could be interesting. Story of a man with a wank addiction. But it doesn't, as you say, I don't even know where they're going with it. You know, it's weird.
I'll give it a try.
I'm
not going to lie. It didn't sell me necessarily, but it's something I'm intrigued about a bit.
Yeah, it didn't sell me.
I just like Nash Bridges there, so I was always going to watch his biography.
It's something you can relate to, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's why it made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there.
Just want to air that.
Me to air it.
Yeah.
Wash it as well, please.
Really? Oh, not the.
There's a program on at the moment called Sexbox. And I just saw loads of people go on Twitter going, TV has stooped as low as it can.
Is that man off Reddit that we talked about? That comes in a box. It's just a documentary about him.
That story.
Oh, God.
It blows my mind.
Basically, a man went on Reddit and said, I've come into this box. And I never clean it or throw it away.
And he's moved house and taken it with him, so he's not thought to bin it when he moved house.
Maybe Don John's the story of this man.
Yeah, maybe
he takes
great
good care of his house, but keeps all of his cum in a box.
He wanks in a box.
And there's pictures of this box.
But they can't give that away in the trailer because it'd be like a massive spoiler.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like instead of Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box, they open the head. And all this cum and what's that smell?
Oh my god!
Moving on.
What?
I, Frankenstein. You have strength and speed and stamina far beyond that of any human. You could use those gifts in a war that you are already a part of. I go my own way. You mentioned it. It's something
it
I twigged on.
Of Underworld.
And then it
went from the people who made Underworld. It's like, oh, there we go.
There we go.
It was very Underworld meets Van Helsing.
Yeah.
But my big thing is, I know it's like the king sort of. Everyone's a bit repentant for coming out of it, but it's just a fact of anyone that vaguely knows it. Frankenstein's the doctor who creates a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I get they want to use. Everyone knows what Frankenstein is. They want to use the name to go, oh, he's kind of Frankenstein, and it's this world of angels and demons fighting. But it's called I, Frankenstein, as in I am Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So unless he builds his fucking self, he shouldn't be called Frankenstein.
Yeah, true that.
And that really, really annoys me in this in particular. Like, people's misconceptions I overlook, but
this
great new art that gets that wrong.
Yeah.
Annoys me a bit for some reason.
And it looks just so cheap.
It did
look a bit. It looks like, I don't know, it might be a bit of fun. I don't take this sort of film seriously. No, but at the same time,
we saw the trailer for Ripped, R.I.P.D., and that came out, and it's fully what you expect from it. And this is going to be the same. I mean, I guess they make money from them, but I hated it that these money's been pumped into these dross films.
And there's people out there who are having to strive to
wanking
make
boxes.
Wanking boxes to make ends meet.
To get on Channel 5.
Yeah, exactly. Documentary. Although Andrew's written on the bit of paper, I, Frank, and that sounds like a far more fascinating film.
Anne Frank.
Anne Frank.
If it was called Anne Frank, and there's Anne angels Frank, and demons and Bill Nighy, and she's hiding in an attic, I'd watch it.
Like tradition, your apology on the behalf of it.
Sorry, it came from a place.
It is weird play.
Yeah, where do you draw the line?
I suppose I don't know.
I watch Human Centipede.
Yeah,
I think I crossed it.
I always think everything's okay to joke about. Context is everything. So in the right context, I don't see the problem.
But we can't joke about I, Frankenstein.
No.
Because it is a joke already. The Desolation of Smaug, Hobbit's second part, we watched.
We did.
I will not risk this quest for the life of one burglar.
His name is Bilbo.
Well, thief, where are you? Come now, don't be shy. Step into the light.
Oh, yeah. I want to know what Stephen thinks. Was it Ricky Gervais, or was it... I'm trying to think of Steve's scale. What's at the other end? What's at the top end of Steve's scale?
Actually...
Naked Vampires.
Is it Naked Vampires, or is it Ricky Gervais? Where is it?
It's kind of hovering. Not quite sure where it is. It sold me more than the Hobbit trailer did. It sold me more than Martin Freeman prancing around in a field in a small house going and singing songs, which is what that initial trailer, that first trailer for the Hobbit, when it went coming soon, la 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 la, singing here's a thing, and I went,
I'm pretty sure God, you watched the trailer for the Lorax.
If Martin Freeman's in the Lorax, then yeah. But that one looked more entertaining.
What is it with you and the cast of The Office? Like,
what's your feelings on Mackenzie Crook?
I like him.
Why? Based on what?
I like him. He's been in some stuff.
What's he been in?
Since The Office.
He's been Pirates of the Caribbean.
He gets passed. How selective is this?
Yeah, it's made me think, all right, maybe I should watch The Hobbit. You guys have gone on about it, and that actually looks quite good.
You always go on about
The Hobbit.
Hobbit, Steve.
So, The Hobbit, the fiend that's...
Andrew did this last week. Like, he made out we were going on about Easy A. What is this all happening?
The Hobbit.
We're all very accepting of each other's opinion. You're allowed to not like The Hobbit. No one said anything. Why do you feel you have to watch it?
Could I go in watching it, though?
You'd need to watch the first part. It's not like, I don't know, Friday the 13th part 2. Yes, you need to see the first part of the trilogy.
It's not like back in the day when they just had a sequel for the hell of it.
They're on a quest, and this is the midway point of the quest.
The beginning bit of the quest is always boring. There's lots of people sat around going, right, I've got a plan. Here's the map. Oh. You go and get a thermos flask.
But it's not like...
you go and get some snacks. I'll do
it's
this.
It's not like
I missed out all that shit. And that trailer made me look like loads of fighting and cool shit was happening.
But it's not like a reality show where it's like previously on The Hobbit. Thorin decided to go back to Mount Thing to fight the dragon and get back his rightful throne.
Why is it?
It's not with none of that.
Star Wars did it with the words at the beginning.
Oh, fucking hell. That wasn't a previously on Star Wars.
It's a Steve Rudd.
Anakin became Darth Vader and everyone was sad.
It struck me the other day when I watched A New Hope, when we watched it together. And it's quite a nice, concise little block of text which flies. When you watch Phantom Menace, it's like a fucking...
Oh, God, it is.
You know what do they call those scrolls? Those Jewish scrolls which they roll out.
Torah.
Go, we're on this. And it's all going on about political senates.
Yeah.
It's like,
fuck you.
But anyway.
Stuff happening in Spain. Anyway, you two.
Smaug, what did you reckon to The Desolation of Smaug?
It, like... It's weird because sort of a flash of a giant spider, a bit like
She-Lob.
And, you know, the teasing Smog, the dragon. Lots of orcs, lots of flashes of potential action. Yeah, it didn't feel a fraction as epic as the first trailer made that film look. Whilst I'm pretty sure a lot more will happen. So weirdly, because I hate trailers nowadays, because it's like, here's all the best bits, here's a snippet at the end, are you going to come and watch it? And it's like, well, you kind of told me what it is. Like, beat for beat.
Yeah.
Like, someone might as well have talked me through a film and then gone, do you want to see it? It's like, well... Whereas this was one of those great trailers I like when it's like, it reassures you loads is happening, but kind of goes, yeah, you're going to have to see it. Mm. And I love that.
I like when I first saw the first Desolation of Smaug trailer, which came out a while ago.
Yeah,
it did the same as the Hobbit, the first one. What was it? The first one called
Unexpected Journey.
Yeah, they did do this. They seemed to play the kooky trailer first, and then the serious trailer second.
Yeah.
And then the kooky one had them sitting in barrels going over a waterfall going, whoa, dwarves!
Yeah. Oh, now I'm slipping on oil! Yeah. Like Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, and then they bring out the proper ones where you have the serious-faced dwarves and the elves looking down their nose at everyone in a mystical way. And, yeah, I'm excited by Smaug, seeing Smaug as well. And I like the way the story's going anyway from the first one and seeing all the spiders and things, and I hope we have the necromancer in it a bit more and things.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's been teased. Mm.
So I thought that looked really good. I'm really looking forward to it now, seeing as I was so blasé about the first one.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't seem like they were doing the hard sell with the trailer either. It's kind of like, you're coming back so we don't have to try. Bit of Gandalf, just the like, you
stuff.
Know.
Yeah.
Oh, that was another good point. No fucking dwarf songs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it with the
it's fine. It's only a few minutes of the 45-minute dwarf planning scene.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about it.
On the fifth page of the flip chart, fucking hell.
I'd rather watch eight dwarfs plan a quest in laborious detail than the Phantom Menace.
Steve went to his local pound shop.
I did indeed.
What did you buy?
I bought a set of DC Comics Top Trumps, which I thought would be perhaps knockoff or the not so well known characters. I don't know. I thought they'd be weird, so I thought it's only a pound. Give it a go.
It's all Crazy Quill and Kite Man, and
we could have Captain a game on Nazi. The podcast. Yeah, Captain Nazi.
They all exist. All those three people.
They do indeed.
Well, yeah, we've got them here today. I've dealt them out. We have.
Oh, is this
six
mine?
Each. Do you look at them or do you hold them and then you reveal them?
I'm not sure.
Usually, well, you have to look if you're going first, don't you? Because you pick what you're going.
So are we taking one off the stack and then?
Yeah, you don't know what's coming up. You just look at what.
So these are officially DC endorsed ones.
We're going to see if we have some similar ones.
Yeah, we're going to see if we agree with the ratings as well as see who wins.
Oh, the old one that used to drive me crackers because. It's usually around Batman. The Batman ratings annoy me.
I'd like to point out at this point that myself and Andrew have actually had a quick look through the cards. Scott hasn't seen these at all yet, so they're completely new to him. We kept that so for a reason.
Right, I'm anxious to know top of my pile.
The top of your trumps.
Yes.
And I'm going to look now, but you're not going to see.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
So Scott's revealing his first. Do we look at ours yet?
No, I think if Scott's first, we just...
Okay. So, like, typical top jumps are out of different things, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Some are out of 10, some are out of 100, some are out of 50 and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it. It could quibble, but it's fine.
Mm.
Depends what it's out of. So, am I going first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with Intelligence. Intelligence 8.
Intelligence 8, okay.
So, we turn ours over now,
Yeah.
I'll flip mine over. There we go.
Okay.
Intelligence 8.
So I've got a tie, a dead heat.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligence 10.
Oh.
Right, I want to know who's more intelligent than Bruce fucking Wayne.
Okay. Well, mine's intelligence 8 also because mine is Batman.
I can buy that. They'd be very similarly intelligent.
So who do you think I've got that might be?
If it's not Brainiac, and maybe Lex Luthor, but I think Batman's as smart.
Lex Luthor, 10.
Okay.
Batman's... Lex Luthor is not too smarter than Batman. He's one. He's one at most, if at all.
Okay.
I'm loving this.
So, Batman and Bruce Wayne are the same intelligence.
So I've won that one. I'm
just well,
in fact, they
have
should won. Have exactly the same
they
stats.
They haven't. The strength, obviously, because of the suit and the we've gone up
augmented strength.
Yeah, but we've gone up 6 points in strength.
His skills are 42 better as Batman.
Yeah, apparently so.
How?
I don't know.
It's mostly martial art. The gadgets.
Who? What's his fighting skill?
Batman's is 92. Bruce Wayne's is only 50.
Somehow Lex Luthor's got 63. He's good at fairly good at fighting.
Lex Luthor's stronger than Bruce Wayne, is he? This is bollocks.
Okay.
Okay. Let's throw those guns down. Okay, so they're probably the most angle point.
Okay, I'm going to turn mine over.
Okay.
I'm going to go, having seen what they're out of and sort of the different levels of things, I'm going to go for fighting skill 85.
Fighting skill 85.
So we've got quite a badass compared to Batman as well.
Okay, mine's got quite a good fighting skill, but it's only 72.
Okay.
Mine's the worst fighting skill at 67.
Right. Okay.
But mine has been trained by the best. He's Tim Drake Robin. Right. So who can fight better than Batman Train, third in line Robin?
Well, before Steve reveals his, mine's Catwoman, 72. She's stronger.
Okay, maybe I can buy that.
All right.
Okay.
So
what was yours, Steve?
Mine is Martian Manhunter.
But strength, like his powers, mean he's far superior, but yeah. I don't know if that means his fighting skills are better. Because when I hear fight skills, I think martial arts.
Yeah, I do. I'm picturing...
Training, I think how best to utilise what you've got. So I think this
is
harsh.
If we're defining fighting skills as using weapons and being able to... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but Martian Manhunter almost equal to Superman in strength.
So at the minute we've got...
How there we go.
Okay.
Look, really all the A-lists so far, really.
Yeah.
So I'm going with... okay.
All right.
What's my best shot here? Oof. It's not a great card, I'll be honest.
There's always one really dud card that stops you from winning.
So
I used to play till you had all the cards off someone.
I think I'm rubbish with this one. I'm going to have to go fighting skill again with 69.
Okay, 69, dude.
Minus 78 on that score.
Minus?
Mine.
He said minus 78. Who the hell have you got? Scott's got the duff.
He's not only
Scott's got the
fighting,
duff card.
He punches himself off.
He sits rocking back and forth in a corner.
Effectively
hitting
himself
in the face. My fighting skill is 85.
85?
Yeah, apparently.
He's the best fighter again.
Apparently so. What's yours? 70, yeah. Well, who's yours, Andrew? Do you want to reveal who you've got?
I have got Scarecrow. Intelligent 6 is not very intelligent.
Even though he's a psychologist who used to teach in a university and develops his own fear toxin.
Yeah.
That's not very intelligent.
He's not intelligent.
He's not very strong.
15.
Okay. He's not very fast.
No.
Okay. He's not got great fighting skills.
Right.
He's a bit of a crap.
But he should be intelligent. It would be my argument.
Yeah.
Who won that one then?
Steve.
Me again.
Wonder Woman.
With Supergirl against Wonder Woman.
I think Wonder Woman would beat Supergirl.
I think she would.
So, by far.
Yeah, easily.
Why Supergirl got three for intelligence?
Three intelligence.
Because she's blonde.
Yeah.
She's stronger than Wonder Woman, though. And she's not quite as fast.
I don't know. I'm not.
Please.
I've got some quibbles here.
Okay.
Quibbling all over the
back
shop.
Back to Scott
for round 4.
Ooh, I've got a good one.
Okay.
Well, in fact, no, I haven't.
Oh.
I'm going to go.
Go on.
This is a punt.
Go on.
This could work or not work.
Okay.
Intelligence 7.
Intelligence 7, okay. 4.
So, one down.
8.
Oh! Scott, who have you got?
It was the Joker, the Clown Prince of Crime. But the true... agent of chaos, true anarchy, but he's not actually particularly good at anything.
Really not.
He's
not very speedy.
Fighting skill 70 is a bit high as well. I don't know if Joker's renowned for his fighting ability.
He's going to be even more upset when he got beaten by his girlfriend.
Oh!
But again, they must have done that because she worked as a psychiatrist at Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Why is that different from Scarecrow? Who develops his own fear toxin.
Yeah.
Whereas Harley Quinn stays in an abusive relationship. That's not very smart.
No.
She's one better at fighting.
One better. And then Green Lantern. It's only four intelligence.
Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, he's a painter. He's expressive. He's smart in a different way.
But he's pretty strong.
He should be. He's got the most powerful weapon in the cosmos.
Yeah. So I won that one.
You won that one. Okay. Oh, I'm going fighting skill 90, because that's the highest. No, is it the highest?
Is that higher than Batman?
It's higher than Batman.
No, it isn't. 92.
Oh, okay. 90.
Thank God.
90. All right. I'd be surprised if it was. Yeah.
Okay, well, you beat me, who's 40.
Right. Fighting skill, are we going? 62.
Okay. So, I've got Batgirl.
Okay.
Fighting skill 90.
Cassandra Cain. She's pretty badass. I don't know why she's included, because there don't appear to be many cards here.
Mm. No.
There's a lot of other people I'd have picked. Mine's Clark Kent, so she just beat Superman.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Again, as soon as he takes his costume off, evidently he's rubbish.
Yeah, well, I don't understand this.
No.
He's still Superman.
He is.
He's still got all the powers and abilities.
It'd be interesting to see who's got Superman.
Mine was the Penguin.
Oh, right. Okay, who's quite strong, very slow.
So the Penguin can take Clark Kent if he wants to.
Yeah.
Into this game.
According to that.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who won that one then?
Scott. Moi.
You, Steve.
Steve, I've back up. Steve. Have Andrew, I not won a round?
Not won a round. I haven't, I'm afraid.
And I can't win now, either.
Okay.
What? All that can happen now is Andrew and Steve draw.
I am going for
a picture of you winning.
I will go for fighting skills again with this
one.
Okay. On 85.
Okay. 40.
87!
Oh, he's
boom!
So, I had Bane.
Bane?
Right.
Fighting skills 85, speed 6, strength 38.
38, okay.
Okay. And intelligence 6. So there.
So Bane, I had Lois Lane.
Rubbish.
Quite intelligent, not very strong, not very fast. Fighting skill 40.
Superman who beats his wife, apparently. The DC cards I used to have, they were different. They weren't red tinged. I think some of the grades were different, but the pictures were exactly the same.
Weren't
I remember
they?
A Penguin and a Joker and a Batgirl card that all looked like them.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
It is.
So how quibbly are you over these, generally?
I know they have to tweak certain things, because you have to have, like, a really good card, a really bad card, and they've all got to have obvious strengths and weaknesses to make the game flow well.
Yeah.
So you have to be a bit liberal and loose. I don't know why you've included Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent and changed the stats from the other one.
It just seems a bit lazy.
But it don't really make any sense.
No. It doesn't.
Batman's entire power, if he's got any, is his resourcefulness and his skills. He's highly intelligent. It's kind of his strong will and resourcefulness. And if resourcefulness is not a sign of intelligence, he's the world's greatest detective. You build that off the back of a brain.
Yes.
And I get Lex Luthor being similarly, if not slightly, because you have to sell its brain against brawn, Superman Lex. But he fucking ate. And Scarecrow's weird. Why is Scarecrow dumb?
I don't know.
Why are some of them dumb? I don't understand.
And then Bane. What's Bane? 6 for intelligence.
But Bane's a master tactician.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm very quibbly, but it doesn't matter.
Well, Steve won the competition.
Hooray!
Steve buys the drinks. Trumps.
Yeah!
So 3 Steve, 2 Andrew, 1 me.
A few weeks ago, we entered our first entrant into the Weekly Geek Speak Hall of Fame.
We did.
Can you describe the Hall of Fame for us? How does it look?
It's a wonderful, magical place. It's like, imagine a great golden ballroom that stretches on forever. Oh. And it's really, it's warm, but not too warm. It's like a tepid sort of. And there's flamingo butlers handing out fromage frais, and there's like palm trees and spas and...
You can get anything you want.
At the moment, it's quite lonely in there because Red Six Porkins is stood there with his glass of champagne and his fromage.
And a load of flamingos.
There's a million tiles, but only one has a name on it. We need to fill these names.
No, but the thing is, though, Steve has to convince us to allow this person in. We're not just going to let any old.
No.
This is utopian paradise. I don't want it wrecked.
And another rule is we can't go like Steven Spielberg.
I imagine it in, like we're building the tiles in this place. We're putting like stars on the tiles, like in the Chinese Theater in Hollywood. But there's giant statues of like, you know, Nolan and Joss Whedon. And Bob Kitt. So they don't need another. Someone else has took care of that. We're here sorting the tile. The honourable mention. The forgotten guys.
Yeah. Okay.
So, who are you bringing to the panel?
So, born in 1957 in New York.
It's born in New York, I know it is.
Yeah, go on.
It's that one guy who was born in New York.
It is, well done.
What's his name?
First jobs involved driving an ice cream truck. One of their first jobs.
Is this why we're putting him in?
This is why we're putting him in.
Mr. Whippy.
Started off. You didn't say that to be someone in films. You just said Hall of Fame.
Mr. Whippy always
Hall
did
of
the
fame.
Best.
Mr. Frank Whippy.
From Corner Shop, he were always nice to me. Steve, you've gotten the wrong idea.
Go on.
At the ripe old age of 20, there became a fireman in New York. Became a firefighter.
Oh, well, he's done a...
He was heroic. He gave children ice cream. He saved people's lives.
I can't vouch for any of his work there.
In Manhattan's Little Italy. Now I'm building. I'm building the background. I'm painting the picture of the
origin story.
The person. Yeah.
So jack of all trades, learning what he wants to do in life, discovering himself in 60s New York, 70s.
Still a volunteer firefighter to this day.
Oh, so he's
still volunteering, and in 9/11 he returned and worked 12-hour shifts.
Is it Nicolas Cage?
For a couple of weeks.
I saw the cover of World Trade Center. He saved it.
Yeah,
all,
you've got
it.
Well done.
Yes.
I can shut the book. What do we think now? He worked 12-hour days searching through the rubble and went back to his old firefighting.
So he's an honourable man.
He's an honourable man.
Yeah, sounds.
He made his film debut in 1986 with a film called Parting Glances.
I've not heard of it.
Okay.
And then so how old was he?
In 86, he was...
31,
yeah.
Okay.
So he's late to the acting game. Then starred in Tales of the Dark Side with Christian Slater.
I've not seen it.
Then played a bellboy, Chet, in Barton Fink in 1991. Okay. He's worked under the directors Jim Jarmusch, Robert Rodriguez, Michael Bay, Tim Burton, Jerry Bruckheimer, Adam Sandler...
You're going for a guess.
Quentin Tarantino.
It's, what's his face? I know his name.
I'll go for one more. He won Best Supporting Male in 1989 for a film called Mystery Train.
Is it? It's the guy in all the Coen Brothers films in Transformers, and his name is What the fuck?
I don't know what you mean. I've got him in my head, but I can't think of the name.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep going.
John Turturro? John... What's the fuck's his name?
So he's done that. In 2002, he sung on Lou Reed's concept album. So he's a singer as well.
John Goodman.
He's been in The Simpsons more than once, as himself, obviously. And he's voiced The Simpsons. He was in The Sopranos as a supporting character. And he was nominated for an Emmy for that.
The
Coen Brothers love him.
I don't remember him in The Sopranos.
Coen Brothers love him. He often plays neurotic and paranoid characters.
Oh, God, it's Steve Buscemi.
It is.
What are you, nuts? We have pancakes for breakfast. Gotta go to a place where I can get a shot and a beer and steak, maybe. Not more fucking pancakes. Come on.
I thought you were going down the John... you were on about Armageddon, not Transformers, with the Michael Bay thing. So Tim Burton, Steve Buscemi. When did they cross paths?
He voiced...
The one thing he didn't write down.
No, I didn't write it down.
He just chucked the
He was an ice cream man, though.
Oh, God, he voiced... No.
I should have thought... Because Buscemi's in all the Coen Brothers films as well.
He's been in a Joe Strummer music video. He's directed 5 films. He's directed The
Sopranos. Do you feel like you have an affinity with him?
He's neurotic and paranoid. He's got big eyes. He's a bit weird. But he's a good guy at heart.
But he's talented.
He's talented. Yeah, exactly.
You know what this is? It's the world's smallest violin playing just for the waitresses.
You don't have any idea what you're talking about.
These people bust their ass. This is a hard job.
So is working at McDonald's, but you don't feel the need to tip them, do you? Well, why not? They're serving you food. But no, society says, don't tip these guys over here, but tip these guys over here. That's bullshit.
Throw it out there. I'm me and Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
He visited the East State Penitentiary and he loved the building so much while he was looking for places to film that he's done the audio commentary for it.
Right.
For the audio tour. He's directed The Sopranos, Oz, 30 Rock, yeah. Nurse Jackie. He's got his finger in loads of pies, but he's not somebody such as Samuel L. Jackson that's just, oh God, it's Samuel L. Jackson again doing that, popping up in things. He nearly played Batman. He was cast as the Scarecrow before it was cancelled in Batman.
But he didn't even play Batman.
No, but Batman Triumphant, been cast, and then they cancelled it.
It'd have been creepy.
So he could have.
He's always one of these kind of actors that I have are co-stars, but do it so well.
This is my thing.
Character actor.
But then he's got to the stage now where he's in Boardwalk Empire, which you referenced.
He's the star of the show,
and Enoch Nicky Thompson, and he's won an award for that. He's won many awards for that, actually. He's finally found his own in a TV series as a really solid character. He's got the lead role, and he plays it brilliantly. And I think he's finally, after coming into acting at 31, doing all these other things, and still flitting around there, he's a good guy. And there's a quote that he said, he doesn't think of himself as having a career. He thinks of himself as having jobs. I want to have good jobs, and I want to do interesting films. I also want to make a living. You don't always work on things you can put your heart into, so it's gold to work on things that you can get into 100%. So he sees himself as having lots and lots of little jobs rather than just this career in acting or his career. He just goes and treats each thing as a little job and puts his everything into it, and you get that. But he's always the sideman, like you say. He's always the guy that and he plays a really solid character in that film. And I like the fact that he's come to the stage now where he's found his own and he's in Boardwalk Empire and he's got this thing.
Mm. Well, I think he's had quite an established career because there's like Fargo.
Fargo, you've got Reservoir Dogs, Tales. He was in Tales from the Crypt, Pulp Fiction, Desperado.
Big Daddy.
Escape from LA, Big Lebowski, Wedding Singer. Crazy Wedding Singer, I know he's one of your roles that you said we discussed him before.
He turns up as the drunk guy.
Yeah.
Man. I'm the best man, the better
fantastic.
Man.
I guess they were prostitutes, but I don't remember paying.
Okay, how about that? How about that? Yeah, how about that?
Terrific.
Huh? I'm a person too, Pop, goddammit. I'm a person too.
You're a moron.
The best man, everybody.
Best man, the better man.
He's really good. Ghost World. I didn't know.
Yeah, he's a really good film.
Really good character. And I didn't know he'd voiced Final Fantasy, Spirits Within, because I've seen the original, not the dub. Spy Kids, he's been in ER. And he's voiced Monsters University, so he's got this
Randall.
Yeah,
he's quite an established name.
H&M model.
Yeah, he's on the line of allowance. I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's like people are aware of him.
Yeah, but he's not someone that's in your face and going, guess what I'm in now.
Super obvious.
I started
star.
Reading through all his things and going, God, he's done that and he's been in that and he's directed two episodes of that and he's been in this and
one of the best character actors. That people know but don't necessarily talk about.
And he's someone I've always had an affinity with, and I think. And then to top it off, things to make him more badass, he was stabbed in the throat, head, and arm during a bar brawl in 2001, which also involved Vince Vaughn.
I always love that Sean Bean story when he got into a bar fight and someone glassed him.
Mm.
And then when it was over, instead of going to the hospital, he just ordered another drink.
I like that.
That's so Sheffield.
Like, come on.
Like, he's a blessed
hardcore.
And that Steve Buscemi's got that. I like that in my mind.
He's got a big deep scar on his face now, and he has to wear loads of makeup to cover that up.
I would put him in, him out, but he has. If he does go in, he's got to be the uppermost limit of who we accept.
No, to rest.
Okay.
Because I wasn't sure when I picked him.
Put it this way. I don't think it's a question of is he good enough to go in. If anything, he's overqualified.
But this is why I was worried, because we've gone from Porkins to me going, I want him in it, and trying to justify it. Because I genuinely think, but
if you imagine, say, Spielberg's the top, the most obvious shout, he's 10.
Yeah.
Porkins is probably a 2.
Yeah.
Some people know him, not really.
Okay.
You've probably gone 7.
All right.
Hmm. And I'm wondering what barometer, how obvious can we go?
Yeah.
Mm.
My question is, do we set a precedent?
Okay.
Do we overlook? I don't want to reject Steve Buscemi, because I love Steve Buscemi. Mm-hmm. Great Sopranos, great in all the Coen Brothers films, great character actor, and I love Boardwalk Empire.
And you may think, you might go, well, what does it matter? Well, it does, because this whole section is pointless if we don't have allowances.
If we just let everybody in.
We might as well just sit here and list our favourite people.
Yeah.
No, that's fair enough.
So, but he's really on the cusp.
Like, it's and like, almost, I want to forgive it.
If you asked me this 2 years before Boardwalk Empire, before he has rocketed up...
Yeah, this is...
Then maybe...
I don't know, because... it's tough to gauge, because I talk to a lot of people who are quite film and media savvy, so they know Steve Buscemi. He's in Reservoir Dogs, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. That's the film that catapulted him into...
But at the same time, you're right, it's not exactly a... star necessarily
until, like you say, Boardwalk Empire, which has flung him to win all these awards, and he's got his lead role, and he's there, and he's finally made it. And
I thought you were going for John Turturro, because until Transformers, people overlooked him a lot.
Yeah.
He's kind of the weird character guy who the Coen brothers use, and he fits in and out of various things. But it wasn't.
No.
But weirdly, symmetrical trajectories.
Definitely.
And all the extra information you've given me is great. I didn't know he was an ice cream. You've been the creepiest ice cream man.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Oh my god.
Probably fits the bill of an ice cream.
Yeah. But the firefighter in all the 9/11 stuff, it sounds like a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
I can't turn him down. I like him too much. The question is, I would have, in my mind, I would have gone, he's already in. We make cases for people.
Okay.
We don't talk about those who are already in.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, heaven's behind me. We're dealing with the people who want to get into heaven.
All right, okay.
Steve Buscemi, in my mind, was already in heaven.
Okay.
But I'm willing to say, we're going to say yeah.
He gets a guest pass.
Basically, for some reason, he snuck out and we're letting him back in. We're the bouncers. I'm letting him back in. He was already in.
Cool.
I need to add a proviso if he is entered that if he's a 7, everyone else has to be a 6-5 below.
I kind of thought,
because to be honest, he's also, when everyone's more and more people join the Hall of Fame and they're in there mingling with the flamingos, everyone's going to be running over to Steve Buscemi and Porkins. The reason Porkins has been put in here is to get the respect, but now someone who's a little bit too,
it's Steve Buscemi, handsome fat guy.
Yeah,
but we don't want that.
No. I get
Steve Buscemi is now a very big fish in a rather small pond.
Yeah,
but a beautiful pond.
We want small fishes in giant, enormous ponds that could be overlooked by all the sharks and whales.
Okay.
We want to go, look at this charming fish that benefits the whole ecosystem of sea life. When I've looked, researched, these people, I've gone, that's too obvious, that are about 2 or 3 notches below Steve Buscemi.
Right.
So, he's already in.
Yeah, that's so fair. I like him, and I won't. Yeah,
it's not a debate. Okay. I wanted to. I want people we can debate about.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cool.
As a barometer of who we allow in as the most upper limit, I will.
Okay.
But begrudgingly.
No, I'd have been happy with he's already in. But I'm okay.
I absolutely adore how serious we take this whole thing.
I do. I like it. It's good.
We're gonna, when we've got enough, I want to set up a whole page. Like, wonderful.
If you'd have brought him in your next one, I might have said no. Because Steve should know now.
Yeah.
But hopefully Steve does know now.
Well, I do. Somebody I've always admired, and I like the fact that he has built up as being this character actor in lots and lots of things. He's finally got his lead in Boardwalk Empire. He's won all the awards. He's got that accolade. But he's not left behind who he is. He's still a volunteer firefighter.
But the only accolade he really wants is being the Weekly Geek Speak Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Well, okay, we have a range now. We have the Porkins at one end and Buscemi at
basically,
the other.
Talk to your average person. Do they know the name?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Do you know what I mean? That'd be my barometer.
That's fine, but...
Okay, yeah.
Welcome
into the Hall of Fame.
What the fuck is he talking
about? My rug.
Forget it, Donnie, you're out of your element.
So So we're here today. We're going to go on a pub crawl.
Oh, okay.
A virtual pub crawl, but because it's nearing Halloween, it's a Halloween. It's a horror pub crawl. We're going to five pubs. And the first pub we go to, we're starting light. We're starting light. We go into a pub with lots of girls. It's kind of a grungy kind of pub, horror movie pub. And the movie is on the cusp of being a horror movie, but the first pub I'm taking you to, the first bar...
I have no idea what's happening here.
We're on a pub crawl.
We're on a pub crawl.
We're talking beer and things. Nice. It should be up to you. But it's an American bar.
Okay.
It's Warren's bar from Death Proof.
Okay, so we're in a movie world.
All right.
Now we're going to discuss the bar and some of the other bars that we could go to. Is there any like standout bars or pubs or things that we could go to on this pub crawl for you?
So basically, you want us to recount some famous bars in cinema?
Yeah.
See, it's not cinematic. But
what do you want to drink, by the way?
It's
Wild Turkey.
White Russian.
Yeah, I'll have a White Russian. Yeah.
We might even put a background sound of a bar in here, a bit of. But I'll bring it in right now as I'm pointing it out. Look at the artifice, guys.
Hey, check those out.
They're
looking at you, Scott.
Well,
we're alone, Steve.
Who are they then?
I don't know. You're freaking me out.
The problem is here, though. We start. We're in a horror movie bar.
Okay.
So we've
it has to be
okay.
Movie.
Yeah, we've
the
stopped.
Bars in horror movie. This is very
it's
niche.
Gonna take a...
Wow. Okay.
Well, I've got five. Because I was thinking about this last night. We're going to go to eventually probably the most famous one.
You're going American Werewolf in London.
Yeah. The next stop, American Werewolf in London, where we are not that friendlyly received. But we go into you go into the Slaughtered Lamb. It's raining outside. We walk in on the moors. We've just come from the Warren's bar, and the Slaughtered Lamb. Did you know that whenever someone walks into a bar now, subsequently, that in the industry it's referred to as the Slaughtered Lamb when everyone stops and turns around when someone enters in a building?
No. I've had that experience several times in real life. When you go to one of those quieter pubs,
yes.
And you almost I don't even think there's that sort of outsider suspicion. It's just a weird thing,
everybody looks
like extra people in our pub.
Yes.
You just get this weird look, and every time I go straight to American Werewolf in London.
Definitely.
It's a truly iconic moment, and probably the most memorable bit from American Werewolf, other than the transformation. It's iconic as a bar, but not one you'd really want to stay in.
No.
In fact, I don't think the locals would like you staying there.
No, drink supper.
You'd have an art. Would you buy a half? No, you'd buy a pint.
Well, we'll move down the road to a little harbour town in Scotland, and we walk in, and it's the Wicker Man. However, this is a friendlier bar overall.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
They're playing guitar, and they're singing you a folk song, but it weirdly refers to you.
Oh,
it seems very convenient.
I'm very flattered. Yeah. You must listen to the podcast.
And there's a.
There you are.
Wow, this is amazing.
But they're trying to send you some kind of subliminal message.
Please die, Scott. It's much better without you. Oh. We only listen to week two.
In fact, you didn't let us win the Deadpool match.
The song they sing is about having sex with the landlord's daughter who is there.
Yeah, okay. I love that song.
The landlord's daughter. So they're basically saying, welcome to the bar, there's the landlord's daughter, she's a slut, everyone has a go on her. Do you want one?
I'll have a go.
For some reason, Edward Woodward decides against this. This one act would have saved him the whole film.
Like, without talking to the girl directly, if everyone's just pimping out a girl to me, I'd be like, that's a bit weird. What?
Yeah. Really?
No.
No, thanks.
They do follow up the song with Gently Johnny, as she is.
Yeah.
Ooh. Gently Johnny.
It's a great song. It's a great soundtrack.
I can't remember it.
It's awesome.
I watched it years
Raindrops and barley.
that's my third part.
Okay. It's all right so far. Where are we going next?
We are going...
The Winchester?
Ooh,
Shaun of the Dead.
Winchester.
I'm slowly getting my head around this section.
We're quite drunk now. We've had our wild turkey to start with, yeah. in the Death Proof bar. We had half a pint of stout, which is what he drinks in. He goes, I'll have half a pint of Guinness, because they don't serve tea.
No.
They do serve tea, but they'll have to make it.
You're in a bar.
They have no food in Slaughter. they just have unwelcome.
Even lamb, ironically.
Did you know also, back to the slaughtered lamb, Rick Mayall's in that bar?
Really?
Rick Mayall is one of the.
Is this a drop dead Fred joke? Like, we can't see him, but you can. You always see Rick Mayall.
Yeah.
He makes film
proof, you know.
He makes.
That's that next to Kurt Russell the whole time. I go, oh, what's going on?
It's always your film fact about anything.
But anyway, okay. We're now in the Winchester. This is probably the calmest of the pubs.
Yeah.
Apart from when chill. The zombies invade.
That ruins it.
What drink would we have in the Wicker Man? I guess it's some kind of Scottish.
What have we had so far?
We've had a White Russian.
Two pints of White Russian.
Stout.
Half a Guinness.
I'm going to have a pear Copperberg.
I'm going to have a glass of red. Large glass of red wine.
What does Nick Frost say in that? Something you cunt. Something about buying around anyway. But this one's, you have quite a nice long time in here.
Is that Hot Fuzz, actually?
It could be.
Someone will correct.
Would any of you cunts like a drink?
I think it is Hot Fuzz.
It's Shaun of the Dead, I'm sure. Because she says, why do you hang around with these horrible people?
Yeah. Oh,
any of you cunts like a drink?
Yeah,
but you can spend, basically, it's a good old proper British pub in London. You can have 8 pints.
Nice.
And then the zombies start coming in. So we're going to have to flee. We go to the basement. The gun is loaded, by the way. But we go into the basement.
Dogs can't look at
us. We go out and we escape. And our last port of call. It's a strip bar. Natural end, but what strip bar?
It's the Titty Twister from Dusk Till Dawn.
It is.
Oh, nice, Steve.
Boom. Our last port of call is we've just run away from zombies. We've walked into. We've had werewolves, we've had zombies, and now we've got fucking vampires.
So we started off.
Nice.
With a psychotic that could easily have chosen us.
Yeah. We ran off.
We went to an incredibly distrustful pub surrounded by werewolves. And then. We've gone to a weirdly satanic cult who are all obsessed with
what is to have sex with the landlord's daughter.
Mass conspiracy around us. And then we ended up in a zombie filled.
Well, we ended up in a quiet pub just to catch our breath.
So it's been a bit wild.
A few hours and then suddenly whoop.
So it's been a bit wild. Yeah. So naturally you want to unwind with some strippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vampires.
Then
we can't catch a break, man.
It's the Halloween pub crawl.
We can't catch a break.
Which is your favourite? Out of those five pubs, where would you want to spend your evening? Bearing in mind,
why does it feel like I have to profoundly pay for every pair of breasts I've seen? Why can't you just
for that reason?
Why do you have to chuck vampires at me?
Yeah.
Can't catch a break, Steve.
No. Damn it.
I think is the werewolves about this slaughtered lamb?
Yeah, there's not. Well, they warn you, and if you leave, there's a chance one's going to eat you.
Right.
But we're pretty much nailed on. We know we're going to the Winchester afterwards. Yeah. But you're not very comfortable in the slaughtered lamb because everyone's like, and they're telling you awful jokes.
I'm going to Winchester.
About the Alamo.
It's kind of escalating threats. Yeah, I think that being in a bar with Stuntman Mike's fine. Because first of all, you'd have to be incredibly unlucky for him to pick you. Second of all, he seems to prefer girls.
Yeah. It's a cool bar. Yeah.
And then I'm unaware of him anyway. It's not like... I don't imagine... Mm. Are we aware of the films?
Basically, you've got either a psychopath, zombies, werewolves, vampires, or a satanic cult that wants you to sleep with their landlord's daughter.
Yeah. I pick the psycho. You can negotiate around the psycho. Yeah.
He's eating his nachos, he's leaving be.
Oh, really?
Don't get into a conversation. You know?
I think that's the easiest challenge.
But
the Winchester. Yeah. I wanna go.
There is something about the Winchester.
You've done your thing, there's the weird cult, you've got nice people, you're surrounded with people you know.
It's familiarity.
Familiarity.
But you've got a whole you're having some zombies.
But you've got the time to chill. You can just have it. You're surrounded by people, you're preparing yourself.
But what you've done there, you've got I'm scared. Like in the psychotic one.
Yeah.
He's talking about Mike. There's just a. It's basically, do you want to be in a bar where there's some low yeah. probability yeah. you might be killed?
But we've already established that.
But also, you're picking the one that you're 100% chance of yeah. danger.
Yeah.
Rather than the risk.
But
the
also, danger. I like the danger.
Stuntman Mike's bar.
Live on danger.
Stuntman Mike, Warren's bar, Stuntman Mike, and if you leave him alone, you're going to have a fine night, you know?
Yeah.
Just ignore the guy at the bar by himself. You would anyway. And you go to Weatherspoons, there's a weirdo at the bar. It happens every yeah. club in Britain.
I assume
weirdos always talk to me.
Ah, okay.
Weirdos talk to me. If I go, I get weird people talk to me.
You'd be fucking loved in this lot of Blam then.
I get drawn into conversations with weird people.
They've all got their arms around Steve singing like genuinely drawn into
conversations with weird people. I must have one of those faces people go, well, talk to him.
It happens to me as well.
So things like that. So yeah, I'm going to go to the quiet place.
I think it's the glasses and beard look. I think we look really approachable to everyone.
They look friendly and warming. I'll talk to them.
They remind me of Santa.
Which is your least desirable one to be in then?
Vampires.
I think Titty Twister, you're pretty much fucked when you walk through
those. You've got 100% down to your danger without the slow moving facts. You can outthink a zombie and outmove.
The very fact of the bar is they lure you into it.
Yeah.
Whereas all
it's
the other ones are not luring you in. Let's put it this way, Slotlander trying to get rid of you. Stuntman Mike just happens to be in that bar. The zombies are coming to the but they're gonna come all over the world.
They'll come everywhere.
You're
just having a good night.
I like the idea that they just seem to swarm around this one point. It's only happening at this fixed locale.
So I think, Titty Twister is the most dangerous because you are being lured in.
I like the idea we've basically gotten that golden ticket from Last Action Hero and we're using it for a pub crawl.
That was our pub crawl.
I liked that one.
It was good.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
It's a good surprise.
We are now going to talk to Rob Neffitt, a man who I would imagine would be the man behind the bar, the man who would recommend your horror movies and your horror drinks.
Definitely.
And a man with all the knowledge. He is the curator of Celluloid Screams, which we'll be attending in a couple of weeks. We're now going to chat to him about a little preview for Celluloid Screams. So here he is. Here is Rob Neffitt. We're joined here today by Rob Neffitt. He's the curator, the man behind the magic, really, at Celluloid Screams. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm kind of we're in the final stages. Obviously, we're a week away. We're kind of at all systems go now.
I trust everything's going to plan for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, there's the usual kind of last minute, not hiccups, but last minute things that all have to be sorted out, and little things that you forget about that spring to your attention at the inopportune moments. But no, it's all on track.
Good stuff. Well, congratulations on a brilliant lineup again this year. It's looking thoroughly exciting. How did Celluloid Screams originally come about?
Oh well, first of all, thanks for the kind words about the lineup. It means a lot because obviously we spend like 10 months of the year putting this thing together, so it's great to hear that. And we've had a lot of positive comments about this year's lineup, so thank you for that. In terms of how it originally came about, I initially in about 2008, I contacted the showroom because I was actually doing some some music stuff with the bar at that point in there that ran for a little while, but that didn't kind of go anywhere. But I got I managed to speak to the right people about putting on a horror festival, because my my background is basically I'm a filmmaker, and I'm also above all I'm a fan of this kind of thing. So my experience has been going to festivals with my own films, and also just going and going to these kind of events as a fan. And I always thought that there was a real kind of appetite for that kind of thing in South Yorkshire. So I always kind of wanted, and the showroom's an ideal venue for it. I always thought that. So that was the original idea that I went to them with. And basically what they said was, obviously, it's always a bit of a risk starting a new event like that. So what we did initially was they let me program a kind of series of kind of an introduction to horror series, and they all sold out. And then in Halloween 2008, we did a double bill screening of The Thing and An American Werewolf in London, and that sold out as well. So at that point, they kind of said, okay, maybe this is something we could look at as an actual thing. So Then you flash forward 12 months, and that was the first edition of the festival, and it's kind of gone from there.
How's it changed over the years? Because it's what year are you in? Is it six or?
Well, this is the fifth year.
Fifth year, yeah. So how's it changed and developed over the years?
It's kind of followed it. There's always a bit of experimentation with this kind of thing, because in the first year it was a kind of modest success in the first year. We had some really strong films. The Secret film, which is something we've carried on every year. The first year was Paranormal Activity, which is actually the UK premiere of that as well, which is a huge
brilliant stuff that's
to get. Yeah. Especially as a first year festival to kind of snag that was a nice bit of good fortune, really. In terms of how it's changed, I think I've just kind of developed as a programmer in terms of knowing what works and what doesn't, and what which films to play in certain slots, and that kind of just develops with experience, really. But the main change this year is the addition of the all-nighter, which is going to test even the most hardcore fans, I think.
Mm. So this year, there's a strong lineup, as I say. If you were to pick like three, which three would you say you're really looking forward to showing us?
That's a tough one, because it's like picking your favourite child.
Yeah.
I think probably. I really, really love Motivational Growth, which is the film that we're opening with. It's one of the weirdest films that I've seen in ages, and that's always a good thing, because when we're programming and looking for new films, there's so many kind of run-of-the-mill, standard, kind of every beat in the film you kind of predict and you see everything coming. This one is just so out there and so bizarre. It's about a guy who's a recluse who's living on his own in pretty much utter squalor. And he kind of knocks himself out in his bathroom, and then he wakes up and there's a big patch of mold on the wall that begins talking to him, and it's an animatronic like creature that's this mold, and it's voiced by Jeffrey Combs, who most people will know from Reanimator.
Yeah.
From Beyond, and he's a real kind of genre, kind of a big name, and he voices the mold, and that kind of adds a whole new level to it. So the thing is, whenever I'm telling people about it, is it's about a guy who has a patch of mold talking to him, and then it gets weird. So that's a really good one. It's the UK premiere, and the director is coming over for it. That's our opening film. If I had to pick maybe the second one, maybe The Battery. The Battery is a really, really strong film.
Yeah.
It's the film that I would say, if you're sick of like run-of-the-mill standard zombie films, this is the one that will make you believe again. It's so good, and it's because it focuses more on it's two guys who played on a baseball team together in their kind of before the zombie apocalypse, and it's basically the film follows them as two guys who didn't really know each other that well, and having to basically spend all of their time together in a confined space of a car, driving and wandering the kind of the wastes, trying to find stuff to do, and it's brilliantly written. It's really, really well judged, and it was a micro budget film. It was made for like $6,000. It's a testament to the quality of the writing and the performances that it's doing. It's doing festivals all over the world.
Yeah.
That would be my second pick. I guess the third one would probably be Big Bad Wolves, which is the film we're showing on the Sunday afternoon.
Yeah,
which is just a masterpiece. It's wonderful. It manages to take kind of quite heavy subject matter. So the basic setup is you've got a guy who's accused of there's a child murderer on the loose, and this guy is accused of the crimes, and for one reason or another they can't convict him, and one of the reasons is that the police officer that's on the case tries to force a confession out of him, and he's caught on camera by somebody, and they put it on YouTube, so the case collapses. So you have these two guys, and then you have a third guy, which is the father of one of the victims, and he believes that it's this guy as well, and he kidnaps the accused.
Mm.
And they basically end up in this tense standoff because the father wants to know where his daughter's severed head is.
Oh my god.
So yeah, really dark stuff.
Yeah.
And he wants to find out, and he wants to make this guy pay for what he believes he's done. And then the cop is also embroiled in this as well, and they kind of end up in this kind of tense standoff in this remote cabin that the father of the girl has hired purely for the basis of extracting this information from this guy and getting revenge. And then it just goes from there, and it's just this... It is, and you don't really know whether he's done it or not. And as dark as it sounds, it's also really, really funny as well.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. It's one of the best films of the year, regardless of genre.
You've got some great guests lined up again. Who can we expect to see there at your festival this year?
Well, the centrepiece guest who needs no introduction is Frank Henenlotter, director of Basket Case, exploitation film enthusiast and expert. He's a real big name, and we're so pleased that he's coming. So we have the Basket Case double bill on the Friday, and Frank's going to introduce and then do his main Q&A as part of that. And then he's also around to introduce Frank and Hooker on which is the first film of the all-nighter on the Saturday. But yeah, get other guests. I mean, we have Lee Hardcastle, who people might know from his film won the ABCs of Death 26 director competition.
Yeah.
And he's coming to present a kind of a retrospective of his work and do a Q&A. You mentioned Jugface. We're really, really thrilled that the director of Jugface and the star director Chad Kinkle, and also the star Lauren Ashley Carter, who people might also know from Lucky McKee's The Woman as well. She was in that. They're both coming over. It's a solid line. And then going through to the last two films on the Sunday, we have the UK premiere of Delivery. And the director's coming for that. And we also have our closing film, again, ludicrous concept, but again, played quite straight, is Disco Path, which is about a guy who, it's a cross between a kind of 70s, kind of Giallo-inspired murder mystery thing, but it's a complete period piece set in the late 70s about a guy who hears disco music for the first time, and it turns him into a homicidal maniac.
Mm.
Which again sounds quite ridiculous, but they play it completely straight. But the director Renaud Gauthier is coming in for that as well. So we got lots of great guests. If you're into the filmmaking side, there'll be a lot to ask about that. But just hearing the stories behind a lot of these films is going to be really interesting.
Great stuff. The outside of the films, then, what else can we expect from the showroom and the stalls and so forth at Celluloid Screams this year?
We're working on a few things. The main thing we've got in the that's actually running right now, so people can go and check it out straight away, is the annual art exhibition that we have, which this year is called Destination Terror. And what we decided, because we co-curate the exhibition every year with Mute, a local artist, who is rightly kind of hailed as a really talented guy, and he's a good friend too. What we came up with this concept of Destination Terror is we're both kind of aware of these the vintage travel posters that you see. You can buy postcards of travel to the northeast coast by train, and these kinds of promotional material from the kind of 50s through the 60s, really. And we thought, well, what if we took kind of iconic horror locations and thought, right, what would the tourist board of this place say about try and get people to visit there? So we've gone for that as a concept, and then the artists have come up with their own kind of spin on it as well. So we've got everything from the orientation map that you might have been given if you went to Camp Crystal Lake.
How brilliant!
As an attendee, that's in there. We've got a promotional poster for Santa Carla from The Lost Boys. We've got stuff from The Fog, we've got stuff from Alien, but it's all done in a way that you kind of look at it and go, what's that? Oh, I get it. And that's what we wanted. It was a real kind of it's very much a geeks sort of a geeks exhibition, which in the best possible sense.
Christoph, you always have shorts on before the films. Is there any you'd say for us to keep an eye open for, any of the shorts that you think particularly good?
We're playing, because we've extended the program to include the all-nighter, we're actually playing the most shorts we've ever programmed this year. I think we're doing 20, excluding the, obviously Lee Hardcastle's thing is separate, but I think with all the rest of the features, we've got 20 shorts on this year. In terms of picks, I would say we're showing a great one with the opening film, a film called The Last Video Store, and it really taps into that VHS fetishization that's going on nowadays, and I'm a big exponent of that. You know, I love VHS and those, you know, old formats that were ultimately flawed, but there's a real charm to them, and we grew up with them, obviously. And it's about the in a world where the video store has been wiped out. There's this one video store that is targeted by this evil corporation for digitization. And it's just brilliant. It plays really well. It's got effects. If last year people saw Manborg, it's got effects in the film by Stephen Konstansky, who directed Manborg. So that's a really cool one. One of the films we've shown in the all-nighter, which I think was probably going to be the last short of the all-nighter, which will go on probably about 6 o'clock in the morning, is a film called Fist of Jesus, which I don't know if anyone's familiar with. We've screened their other films. It's a Spanish filmmaking team. We screened a film called Metal Creepers, and we also screened their film Brutal Relax. It's the kind of latest film by them, and that is, it's basically Jesus Christ battling zombies.
Wow! Yeah.
So that sells itself, doesn't it? Really?
Really does. Yeah.
And if you can think of, you know, they throw in all stuff about the feeding of the 5,000, so he turns one fish into lots of fishes that actually then end up being weapons. So he's got like a swordfish, and he's sort of all these elaborate things, and then cowboy zombies come into it as well. It's ridiculous, but brilliant.
I think you can file that wonder under batshit insane.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
Good stuff. So where can we find out more about the festival? Because there's a week running up to it now. Where can we find out more?
All the programme information in detail is on the official festival website, which is celluloidscreams.co.uk. The passes are still available. We've sold over and above the amount that we normally do, which is great for us, but there are still passes available at the time of me speaking, and they're available from the showroom website, which is showroomworkstation.org.uk. Also, the all-nighter is available as a standalone ticket if people wanted to just do that, which is £25 or £20 concession, and individual tickets are available for the rest of the films throughout the programme.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be being there at the festival, because we're recording at the festival. So thank you for accepting us to come along, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you very much there to Rob Nevitt. Thank you for joining us today. By the way, it's just me and Scott. It's me and Steve now. We are. Scott got so scared of the horror movies he had to go back to watch some more Disney films.
He's gone to find a few more bit weirds.
Bit weirds, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Celluloid Screams will be at Sheffield Showroom Cinema, 25th to the 27th of October, which is next weekend. We will be bringing you a special. The whole episode will be recorded at Celluloid Screams. We'll have interviews with some of the guests, and we'll be reviewing the films as we go. That will be out on the 1st of November. Is there anything you're looking forward to, Steve?
I like the look of Jugface.
Funny, yeah, that's the one I'd written down as well. It seems one of the more unique ones.
It does. It terrifying sort of weird moulded clay face, and there's like a ritual in this village. Yeah. It all looks a bit weird, but it does. I've just written creepy. It looked really creepy. I'm looking forward to Der Fan, which is actually a 1980 film from 1982. It's about an obsessive fan that stalks a Gary Numan tribute band. That's all I needed to know, really. Yeah. The trailer made it look, again, quite creepy, quite of its time in '80s, but I think it looked like something that had aged well. I wouldn't have said it was made in the '80s.
And my final recommendation is Delivery. Feels like the most mainstream of them there, but it's about a reality TV series follows a pregnancy of a woman, and then there's some kind of demonic thing happens. Yeah. But it looks interesting.
It's like a reality show, isn't it? They agree to film the baby from inside the womb and right up to birth, and it's all a bit... Yeah, I think somebody did review it on Twitter for us.
Yeah, well, as I say, you can follow Sheffield Horror Fest at Chef Horror Fest for all the details and celluloid screams.
Looking forward to it. If you're there, if you're listening to this and you're there next weekend, tweet us at Weekly Geek Speak. We'll try and get a 3-word review out of you at some point over the weekend. We'll be there with the microphone, so we look forward to meeting some of you in person. It's time for Weekly Geeks Speak. And we've got quite a lot of interaction this week, as always, so thank you very much for your comments, answering our questions, and your 3-word reviews. At Moby Duck just gets a mention because he caught an aggressive daddy long legs and plucked it straight from thin air, and then celebrated in a very manly fashion by lunging. So he's keeping the daddy long legs population down so they don't take over the world. So
to keep Scott safe. On that point, I wanted to give our podcast Follow Friday special. This time goes to Space Monster Magazine, at Space Monster Mag. They were also asking questions about giant insect movies, which I thought tied in with what we've been talking about the past couple of weeks about what would be the freakiest insect
mollusk.
We had some great responses last week, but I think the Flickist also brought up some good ones, and one I suggested to the Space Monster Mag, it was Squirm, which isn't necessarily not about giant insects, but it's about earthworms that start killing people.
Alright.
Really grim 80s movie. It's just come out. Arrow released it a few months ago, I think. Arrow film. But yeah, follow our Fun Friday special is Space Monster Mag at Space Monster Mag. They're an interesting little new magazine that's coming up, and what definitely a Twitter that's worth a follow.
Sounds good. We talked about the Godzilla trailer, which sadly got taken down very quickly. At the Flickist managed to catch it, and it said, "It's more proof of concept than trailer, but wholly impressive. It had the right look, the right spirit, and he didn't sound like a panther." So
It was. I saw it.
I managed to see it
on some dodgy. It was dodgy, but it was definitely the trailer.
Right.
We'll trailer trash it when it comes out properly, but initial thoughts, actually I'm really excited. It's got a much more Cloverfield feel, yet still being its own thing, and you do get a glimpse, just a shadowy glimpse of Godzilla in it. It looks a lot more... the design looks a lot more Godzilla-y than the giant T-Rex.
You can tell I did a quick stint on Twitter this week because the next ones are the answers to a few questions I threw out when I had a spare minute. I dug out my NES and I was looking at what games to get. So I threw out, what was your favourite NES game? Did you own one? At Usal said, I wish it was Battletoads, but truthfully it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles along with DuckTales, which all fantastic games. Mentioned that there was a remake of the DuckTales game on Xbox and PS3 on the arcades, and it's a really, really well done, well crafted remake. Brilliant graphics. They've got the original voice actors in to do the voices rather than have the text on screen, and it's just a really good solid platformer. It reminds me of how good games used to be. At Y2 Stump said, the best football game ever, # NES American Football, which I never played it, but I was looking at buying weird DVDs and tweeted what should I buy, make it as obscure as possible because I don't want your mainstream stuff. At Hollow Spy said, frequently asked questions about time travel, which I've never seen. I looked it up. Sounds like it could be pretty good. At The Flickist said, can I do it till I need glasses, which is Robin Williams' screen debut. Short movies out of old jokes, HTF. But no, I looked it up and that sounds really, really bizarre. Sadly, it's really hard to get hold of. And then at L Ride, another one, the wonderful ice cream suit. Never watched it, but I bet it'd be fun.
And
maybe
you looked this up and it was like 70-odd quid.
Yeah, it was a lot of money to buy. I think it was £70 to £90 on VHS, let alone DVD, which was limited. So thanks for the suggestion. Sadly, I'm not made of money. I then threw out another one, favourite movie animal. At Moby underscore duck, the OB in a zero. Clyde in Every Which Way But Loose, which I would thoroughly back. Fantastic. At Usal was Animal from Muppets. Yeah, so that was that one. Pancho Villa, I was watching QI, and Pancho Villa's last words, he was a revolutionary, said, "Don't let it end like this," throughout What Would Your Famous Last Words Be. At Angelus0186, we have to go back, or I told you I was ill, which I liked. And then our very own at Scotty Magic said, "Touch my bum, this is life."
Yeah, he's cheeky girl.
Yes.
Death.
Yes. At Elride said, "Probably more a death rattle, as I'm not that quick-witted. I'd expire while desperately trying to think of poignant last words." I think that's probably what I'd do. And then at The Flickist said, "It's not even load... dot, dot, dot." Which I liked. Okay, three-word review time. At Sayer Flash said, "Danger Diabolique," which is a film from 1968. Never heard of it. Mm-hmm. Camp Crime Caper, 7 out of 10, which I liked. And then we threw it out there to Facebook because we've topped the 100.
Well, we've been apologising to Facebook because we neglect it.
We
asked, and we got a load of followers this week as well, so thank you everyone who followed.
Yes.
We have broke the 100 mark now. We're well into the 100. So yeah, we thought we'd throw out the three-word reviews to Facebook, and we got a good response.
Mm-hmm. First one we got was from Dan Thomas. Alex Cross, huge shit pile, 3 out of 10.
Fair enough. I looked up the film. I've never heard of it, actually.
I'm not sure.
Some kind of FBI kind of mystery program.
Okay. Jamie Jenkinson, Lone Ranger, only chuckled occasionally, 6 out of 10. That's quite
not
a high score.
Not as bad as what I'm hearing about.
Yeah,
it.
That's not bad.
I mean, Luke Pietnik came on a few weeks ago, not came on, but he gave us to one and said it wasn't as bad as along those lines. It was quite good, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. And obviously, Tarantino again put it in his top 10.
He did, but then he put Kick-Ass 2 in as well. Mm. We might discuss this next podcast. Anthony Larson, Detroit Rock City, which I actually watched as well. 70s rock awesomeness, 8.5 out of 10.
Do you agree with that?
I'd say it's probably a little bit high. I'd go 7.5 if I was giving halves. But yeah, no, it's a thoroughly enjoyable film. Great soundtrack, great story, it's funny. Really enjoyed it. Nicholas Power, Human Centipede 2, throbbing hard on throughout, 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Nicholas. Mark Ride, Schindler's List, you'll need tissues, 8 out of 10.
To quote your favourite comedian, Ricky Gervais... "Oh, it was terrible. There's only one shower scene in it."
Ooh.
I thought that was good.
Yeah. I like that. Damn it. Damn it. The beginning of the turn. Tristan Ayling, Tinkerbell and the Lost Treasure, not for me, 4 out of 10. Congratulations to Tristan as well, who's recently just become a dad for the second time. So I guess that's why he's watching child's films. Matty Evers, High Fidelity, 9 out of 10. High Fidelity, high.
Thank you very much for your three-word reviews. The only other one I've got, which grabbed me as a bit of interest, was... Right. At Hollywood Rough, mentioned to us Twisted Twins, who directed American Mary, which we like, mentioned that they were filming one of the sections for the ABCs of Death 2. We talked about that months ago in
the
podcast. And he said that the M is for, is being thrown out to people, to many.
Oh, right, so there's a competition.
There's a competition. Nice. It ends on the 31st of October. I'm gutted, because if I'd known before, I would have thought about making an entry, genuinely.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's quite cool that M is for is going to be thrown out to the public. So thank you for bringing that Hollywood Rough. If you think you can very quickly make one, I mean, this is coming out on the 18th. If you can make one, then get it in. We'll be thinking up our own M is for the start of next week's podcast.
Definitely.
Just for us, because it worked last time. We did it for the first film. So yeah, that's I think the Weekly Geeks have spoken.
Mm-hmm, they have indeed.
I'd just like to say thank you very much for listening. Next week we'll be looking at some of the blockbusters that we missed this year. I will be talking about Star Trek, so I've only just seen it, Star Trek Into Darkness.
I'm Steve will... really intrigued by your thoughts.
Yeah, Steve should have seen Iron Man 3 by that point.
Yep.
So he can share his thoughts on that. We also will be answering the listeners' questions. So we did it a few weeks ago, we'll be doing it again. So please give in your
questions to us, sensible and silly. We'll take both. And we look forward to hearing those. We'll also be gearing up for Celluloid Screams. And yeah, so lots to look forward to, and lots more. We'll be recording that next week. So thank you again for listening.
Thank you kindly for listening.
And we are now going to have a bath together.
Yay!